What really gets my dick hard is...
All right, welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast Radio. I am one half of the Metal Up Your Podcast host, Clint Wells. This is a bonus episode. I know, I get it. It's dropping on Monday. You guys want that real content, that real Metallica content. Here's the deal. We're both on tour. Ethan's out with Need to Breathe. I'm out with Rodney. I'm in lovely Harrington, Delaware. And we just couldn't get it together. So we figured instead of doing nothing, which I hate doing nothing, existentially... just very troubled by the whole doing of nothing. Instead of doing nothing, we're both going to drop a radio episode today. Radio episodes are fun because we do AMAs, first of all, through our various socials, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And so we get to answer some questions, talk about music, life, culture, films. And we also get to explore some stuff. Like we get to explore some different kinds of music that Ethan and I both like. In the process, you learn a little bit more about us. Then when we come back and kick your ass with more Metallica content next week, the experience is more complete. There's more context. When I'm pontificating endlessly about the merits of Load and Reload, you're going to understand why I resonate with those records when I talk through some of my feelings about the world and we listen to some of my favorite songs. So, if you're along for the ride, thanks for listening. We're going to have fun. I listen to these in real time with you. It's just a total radio show. And as usual, you guys came through with a bunch of cool questions on Instagram and Twitter. So we're going to have some fun today. And I hope wherever you're at out there in the world, in your lives, maybe on your way to work, you're on a train or in your car or on a bus, or you're doing the dishes at home. I listen to podcasts a lot when I'm doing the dishes. Wherever you're at in your life, I hope you're okay. I hope your families are okay. And let's just take an hour and a half maybe and forget about some of that shit and listen to some tunes. We're going to start right now with a lovely song by Echo and the Bunnymen called The Killing Moon. Enjoy.
He will wait until you give yourself to him.
Right, The Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen. I first heard of that song from the masterpiece 2001 film Donnie Darko, Richard Kelly's film. If you haven't seen Donnie Darko, good grief, I cannot recommend it highly enough. It is a movie about fatalism, about time travel, about relationships, trying to undo the past, being a slave to the illusion of free will. It's brilliant performances by Jake Gyllenhaal, Jenna Malone, Maggie Gyllenhaal's in it. I mean, go check it out, Donnie Darko. And don't look into too much of what it's about before you see it. It's a total mind trip, and it's beautiful and scary and all that stuff. So, other than that song, I don't really know much about Echo and the Bunnymen. I bought like a greatest hits that had The Killing Moon on it. I listened to it maybe five times. Like, when it comes to that sort of flavor, that 80s flavor, I kind of get my kicks with The Smiths and The Cure and, you know, Tears for Fears. I don't have an Echo and the Bunnymen shaped hole in my heart is what I'm trying to say. So, but there is no denying, at least for me, that that song is moody and powerful and sexy and interesting. So let's open up to some of these questions and see what we can figure out about the goddamn world together, huh? Here we go. Andy Brown asks, if you can make the SNM2 shows, will there be a Metal Up Your Podcast San Francisco party? Well, of course there will be. It's hard for us to commit to dates this far out just because of touring. It seems unlikely that I'll be available that weekend. But I can promise you this, because September 9th is my birthday, and I'll be 36, and the 8th is the second SNM show, and the 10th, the Dave Matthews Band are playing that same arena. So I would love to turn it into a big birthday thing, go see both shows. And then, of course, whether Ethan can go or I can go or we can both go together, once we can confirm that we'll be there, we will be organizing some sort of Metal Up Your Podcast party. That is for sure. Thanks for the question. Cthulhu45 asks, what Metallica song would you want Dave Matthews Band to cover and vice versa? Well, here's the deal. Believe it or not, homies, my beloved homies out there, Dave Matthews Band is actually a pretty progressive band. They can do a lot of funky stuff. They often write and perform in odd time signatures. Beloved songs that I've listened to since I was 15, sometimes I can't even figure out where the downbeat is. 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I can't even figure out rhythmically what they're doing. They have the song called Shotgun that's not on a record, but I've watched the videos of that song a million times, and like the way Carter comes in with this drum fill, I just simply don't understand the timing. And I've been playing music professionally for like 20 years. So, having said all of that, it'd be cool to hear them do maybe one of the more progressive tunes. Maybe something off Justice. You know? Maybe, or if we're going to, you know, peek back later, maybe like Judas Kiss or something. It's a really tough thing to think about because obviously, though both bands share a progressive backbone, the styles are just so different. Would it be a reimagining? Like if Dave did Blackened, is he going to do it in earnest? Blackened is again! Or is he going to reimagine it into some pajama pant wearing, what would you say, smoke a joint on a fucking nature hike way? I don't know. Now, what song would I want to see Metallica do of Dave's? It'd be cool to see Metallica do the song called The Stone. Those of you who are hip to Dave know The Stone's probably top 5 or 10 most beloved Dave songs. Super dark, dark subject matter. I don't really know what it's about, but someone fucked up. Someone did a bad thing. And anyway, that's a great question. Let's move right along here. Metallica fan asks, what is your favorite Metallica era? It's tough to say. I mean, I'm tempted to say current Metallica is my favorite just because that's what's going on. That's what I'm excited about. They sound great. They look great. They're making great records. The image of me, my sort of Metallica that was grafted onto my brain as a young kiddo will always be Black Album through S&M. And that doesn't really have much to do with anything real about them. It really is more about the age I was and how impressionable I was. So there's no right or wrong to that. I'm not saying that it's better than Lightning and Puppets era or whatever, or even modern day. So how about that non-answer to the question? Let's read a couple more and then we'll get back to the tunes. Alex VD says, what are a couple of your favorite movies that you've seen too many times to count and you'll put on as background noise to do other things around the house? My go-tos are Dazed and Confused and The Big Lebowski. I recently picked up both sets of the Dazed and Confused soundtrack. It's so good. Lots of classic rock. Well, that's cool. I don't really put on movies in the background when I'm doing shit. It doesn't even occur to me to do that. We have a TV in our bedroom. We have a TV in our living room. And unless I'm in bed or on the couch, when I'm doing other things, I'm not really near the TV, so it wouldn't make sense to just put something on. Now, there are movies that I've watched so many goddamn times that I could recite them to you. These would be generally 90s comedies. Wayne's World, Wayne's World 2, Coming to America, which is 80s. But even like dumber movies like Uncle Buck, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Pulp Fiction is a movie I watched a million times as a kid. Quite a lot, actually. These days, I have to just be a lot more discriminate about carving out time to watch films. I love movies so much. I love a 90 to, you know, 200-minute medium of telling a story. I really love it. I'm sad that it's kind of going away and being sort of replaced by episodic, streaming, constant content. That's kind of the new thing. And there's a really great book I read called The Big Picture by Ben Fritz about sort of the future of cinema. It's not great news, but it's a pretty honest, unsentimental account of how the film industry is changing and being shaped by cultural pressure for content. People aren't going out as much. They're binging more. What does it mean when you are wanting to make content for people who are binging it? as opposed to, you know, when we liked The Sopranos, we had to wait every goddamn week for that next episode to drop. And there'd be this sort of week-long conversation about that show, about what happened, what might happen, speculating. It was exciting, and I personally believe that it's more gratifying when you've had to, when it's cost you something. So whether that means you had to pay for it with money, or you had to wait and be, you know, titillated or anticipate something, I just think the payoff's better. But that's all definitely changing. I mean, people are mad at HBO because HBO still kind of waits for new episodes. And, you know, the youngins are like, that's not how we do it anymore. You guys are dinosaurs. We want all the content in the whole fucking world at our goddamn fingertips. And by the way, we want it for fucking free, bitch. And then those of us in the real world who understand how the world works, because we're not little babies on our mommy's boobies, are going, yeah, but first of all, things cost money to make. Like, you have, there's like, there's a, someone made the chair you're sitting in. They didn't think it, they didn't fucking have Harry Potter Patronus bullshit a chair for you to sit on and fart in. Someone made that, and they have to be paid to make that, and they had to buy the raw materials to make it, and then they had to be paid on top of that so they can fucking get medicine for their kids. So the world keeps spinning, you see. Yes. Yes. The world's spinning. Not out into chaos, but into unity and harmony, where we can all live together at Elon Musk's house. Okay? Tangent City. One more question. This is Clark Wayne. If Torben leaves his burrito on the ground, will Clint A, take a bite, B, avoid it because it's more zen than the universe could handle, or C, say fuck it and demolish it? Well, I have so many questions that need answered before I can say, but what Clark's referring to is MetFam Mike at our Metal Up Your Podcast 2-year anniversary party. Ordered a burrito at the end of the night. I saw it sitting in a bowl on a chair, and I feel like, in my defense, I gave it about 10 minutes because I thought that surely belongs to somebody and I'm not a monster. But what I thought had happened is enough time had elapsed to where I thought whoever got it may have left it, and I'm hungry and it's a burrito and I would like to now eat it, and I was drunk. So I ate it. I found out it was MetFam Mike's. I apologize, offered to buy him another one. We made peace, all is right in the world, and now we have a beautiful, fun anecdote to tell our grandchildren in 100,000 years when we freeze our brains in space. But would I eat Torben's burrito? Well, definitely not if it was on the goddamn ground. I'm not that hungry. Would I demolish it? I don't know. I'd probably just let it be. Or I'd probably be like, hey, Torb, dude, your burrito, do you want it or not? Oh, I don't think I want it. Well, can I have it? Can I have a bite? You may have a bite, Clint. There we go. Me and Torb sharing a burrito, just like Lady and the Tramp with the spaghetti noodle. It's me and Torb face to face. And the burrito's getting smaller. Oh, the burrito's getting smaller. And our lips get just close enough. Sorry for that horrible image. To get us out of that, how about we listen to some Soundgarden? This is a deep cut from Super Unknown, probably their most popular album. And this is a jam I love called Fresh Tendrils. Check it.
Long time coming.
All right, long time coming. Fresh Tendrils, Super Unknown, Soundgarden. Rest in peace, Chris Cornell. My goodness, I miss him so much. And I feel like I took for granted the time that he was here. And that scares me about the bands that are still here that I feel like I'm in danger of taking for granted now. So the lesson, I guess, being let's try not to take shit for granted, man. Deep thoughts with Clint Wells in a hotel room. Let's move it to the Twitter for the Q&A. Let's see. Wayne LaFleur asks, after seeing Bohemian Rhapsody, I'd like to hear you cast a Metallica bio movie. What actors would play the band members? I'll nominate Ian McKellen for Torben. That's pretty good. Maybe Chris Hemsworth for James Hetfield. I don't know. I'm bad at that. I would have to like sit down and think about it. Maybe I'll sit down and think about it. Or maybe I'll stand and think about it and get back to you. Or maybe we can have listeners write in who they think it would be. My problem is those movies are so rarely good. They just have a hard time nailing that stuff. I think Bohemian Rhapsody was awesome, though. It was a rare exception. Oskari Imonen asks, how are you doing? Wish all the best for you, and gotta say these radio episodes are awesome. Keep them up. Well, thank you. I'm doing okay. I'm still got this like head cold thing. I've had a cold for like, feels like 2 months. Which part of me is like, am I dying? Do I have like something really wrong with me? Should I go to the doctor? But I'm okay. I'm busy with work. We just finished this record with Elise. Got that to mix. It's been a really busy touring month. Things are going good with the songwriting. Things are great with the family. I think everything's okay. But at the same time, I don't know. And I may wake up tomorrow and feel very differently about the whole shebang. And that's kind of what it's like to live in my head. Sometimes it's really fun, sometimes it's really scary. All right, Tommy Trinkeller says, curious if you've seen Taylor Swift's Reputation Tour on Netflix, and if so, what did you think? If not, definitely check it out. It's truly phenomenal. All aspects of production are phenomenal, and the live arrangements of the songs are sick. Well, I haven't seen that, but two of good friends of mine, Matt Billingsley, is her drummer, and my friend Mike Meadows is her guitar player. And while they were traipsing around the entire freaking world playing stadiums, in between all that, we were hanging out and writing songs and getting coffee. And Matt and I co-produced a song for a country artist. And Matt and I have been trying to get into producing stuff together as a team. And all that to say, I'm not bragging about my friends. I'm just saying I'm aware of what's been going on with the Reputation Tour because those two dudes are obviously a big part of it. And like they were just giving me all the details about their production rehearsals and all the things they're doing in their show. And it's just, it's great, man. There's a reason she's one of the biggest stars in the world. She's got a great head on her shoulder. She's a great role model for kids, especially girls. And she writes great songs. And she's very business savvy. She cares about songwriters. She cares about publishing. She signed a new deal and this year, or the end of last year, I believe, with Universal, that was contingent upon Universal restructuring their royalty rights for streaming publishing for songwriters, okay? She has that much power, and she uses that power for things like that to help songwriters like me make money and support my family and have a quality of life that makes sense for me to keep doing what I was put on here by the gods to do, which is make music. And God knows she doesn't need the money. So anyway, I have a lot of respect for her. I'm very glad that she's around and that she's as cool and good as she is. Maybe a few more and then we'll move on to some tunes. Octune Bill says, do you think having a number one album or single means anything today like it did 20 or 30 years ago when bands actually sold albums? There's a lot that goes into being at the top of charts. You know, it's more than just money. It's more about exposure. Your hard ticket value changes a lot. And I can't speak much for like other realms, other parts of the music world, but in country, you know, cracking top 30, you need to do that. And then obviously once you crack, like we just cracked top 20 and you start to see that reflected in tickets. And then we're invited to do some TV stuff. You crack the top 10, you get to number one, that just translates into whatever tour you're on, you're going to start selling more tickets because you're getting more exposure. You're getting more press. Your name's, you're in more conversations. You're more embedded in the cultural zeitgeist, what's happening now. In terms of how that worked before, I don't know. I really don't know. Sometimes it makes sense to me, and sometimes it just doesn't. And then, of course, now the landscape is just literally changing beneath our feet all the fucking time. So it's hard to make sense of what models worked and what didn't and what we're going to do later. And like, Dave Matthews Band's last record, Come Tomorrow, which came out last summer, was their seventh record consecutively in a row to go number one, okay? That means that the last seven records they've put out, all of them went number one. And they hold the title for that. They're the only band that's happened to. And I think Metallica's number two with six number ones in a row, Hardwired being their sixth in a row. Now, did that translate into more fans for Dave Matthews? I don't know. I don't think so. I think they have been playing to their people for like 15 or 20 years. They kind of got all their people in the 90s. Got everyone all riled up and wrangled together in one big patchouli boat. And then they sailed through the desert to Burning Man. Okay? And then they got them all lassoed up in a giant EDM tent made of hemp. And that's where we've all been since. That's where we are. Like, remember in Jacob's Ladder, in the whole movie, he's fucking seeing demons in the nightclub and his life's all fucked up and he's in the bathtub and he's got a fever and they're dumping ice on him and he's screaming and crying. And then you find out really the whole time he was like on a gurney in Vietnam or something. That's me. Okay. I think I'm in this hotel room doing a radio show in Harrington, Delaware. But really, I'm in a huge boat with a lot of frosted tips, fucking hemp necklace, Birkenstock wearing cargo khaki beclad men and women at Burning Man. And Dave Matthews is the evil king. I've got them all. What would you say? He's grown like seven horns out of his head. Motherfucker's just sitting on a pile of fucking bodies. How about another couple of questions as a palate cleanser before we... Actually, you know what? Fuck it. This is a song by Dave Bazan. If you guys don't know who David Bazan is, he was in a lovely band called Pedro the Lion. And I came across him, I don't remember how, I saw him at this little club called Zydeco. In fact, I went there with my friend at the time, Isabel, who later would become my wife. It wasn't even really a date. This is even before I got married to my first wife. We were just buddies, and we both liked Pedro the Lion, and we went and saw him together. And this is an interesting song by David Bazan. It's from a solo record called Blanco, and it's all kind of electronic shit. He's mainly kind of a three-piece rock band guy, like Dinosaur Jr., but with really heavy, slow, plodding lyrics about God and shit. But this record was really more about him leaving all of that behind, which will be a theme for this episode a little bit. There's some questions later that deal with spirituality and religion and all this stuff. But this song is about, it's called Oblivion, and it's about kind of his tenure in the music industry and how it didn't really work out for him. He's still in a van doing house shows and not seeing his kids grow up and not making enough money. But what do you do when you've given your whole life to something? You know, he's probably in his 50s. And how do you start over? How do you make sense of that? Well, he does what he's supposed to do. He writes songs about it. This is one of my favorites. It's called Oblivion. And I went through a phase where I listened to this record every night to go to sleep for maybe 4 months straight. So check it out, Oblivion, David Bazan.
Can you find the frequency?
Oblivion. Okay, man, that was kind of hitting me hard just now. If you like that flavor of that song, that whole record is that good. In fact, that may not even be the best song on the record. And if you want to get into Pedro the Lion, there's a really great record called Achilles Heel that I would recommend, although his probably most famous one's called Control, which is also very, very good. The dude's just a great songwriter. And, you know, a philosopher of sorts. I've lost a little interest in kind of where he's coming from the philosophical side, just because I feel like I'm in a different spot, but he's always interesting, and he finds really great ways to, he uses really interesting language to shape thoughts that I think a lot of people have in their 20s and 30s about what it all means. Speaking of what does it all mean, my friend Nicole Williams, as Turtle Girl, some of you may know her as, and some of you probably met her at the party if you came. She asked, tell us about your journey from theist to atheist. Was there a pivotal moment? So what she's talking about is for maybe, well, let's just start from the beginning. I'll make it quick. And I'm about to say some things about religion. So just let me do a really blanket disclaimer and say, I don't want to offend anyone. Everyone has dearly held beliefs. And in my world, there's room for all of it. So let's just say that. I grew up in Alabama, which is a nominally religious place, at least in lip service. People are politically conservative and they're religious. And I grew up going to church, not often, usually just like Easter and like whenever like it made, like when there was a big holiday, like Jesus coming back from the dead or Jesus being born. We'd go to church. I never liked it. It always felt very strange to me. Very foreign, very otherworldly. I never felt connected to it. And then we'd only go like a couple of times a year, and I'd get dumped in the Sunday school class with these fucking kids I didn't know. And I didn't really know much about religion, so I just always felt inadequate. And I always felt like I didn't understand the language. It was just creepy shit to me at the time. Well, you fast forward to when I was maybe 16 or 17, I was dating a girl who was like super duper religious, like really into it. She was heavily involved in this youth group, and you know, she really believed it. She really prayed and she really read the Bible. And she was smart and cool and interesting. I'd never really encountered that. And I was attracted to it. And she invited me to these youth rally things. And I went to one and the music was cool. It was like rocking and like U2-ish. And the people there were cool and smart and weren't like weird old people singing hymns. And I got excited about it, and I kind of dove in. And for about 10 years, all through my first marriage and all this, I was a pretty devout evangelical Christian. I went to a Presbyterian church in downtown Birmingham called Red Mountain Church, part of the PCA, and got heavily involved in theology, read about a million books about it, was kind of tied into this really conservative branch of Reformed theology, this Calvinism stuff, and really heavy on predestination, the lack of free will. It was very rigorous, heady stuff. I went to Bible college because I thought that I was going to be a pastoral counselor. And I was really into it. It was a really big part of my life, and I really believed it was all true. Read the Bible studiously, studied it all, really cared, prayed a lot, tried to feel connected to God, tried to get people on board. I would, tell people about the good news of Jesus, and I wanted all my friends and family that were skeptical or didn't believe in it to get on the ride because I wanted to hang out with them in heaven forever and all that stuff. And many people know now that I'm an atheist. I've been an atheist for a while, coming up on 10 years. And I would say fairly staunch, And it's like anything. There's not really a moment I can point to or a day. But there was definitely a trajectory that began when I started touring and traveling and meeting a lot of different musicians who didn't believe what I believed and who would just maybe softly challenge me or just be cool and, oh, I don't believe in that. That's cool that you do. And just seeing that the lack of consensus about it and seeing that there was so much more on offer ideologically about what's true about the world. Because ultimately, Christianity is a claim about what's physically true, what's naturally, materialistically true about reality. It's a truth claim about reality. And so as I began to investigate that, it started to make less and less sense. And I started reading Charles Darwin, which is really hard to read, by the way. I'm not saying I was very smart. It was hard to read. I tried to read Origin of Species. It was really tough. But then I read a short little thing he wrote on natural selection. And I started getting into evolutionary biology. So that was kind of hovering. And like just about explanations about the diversity of life that makes sense, that you can see in fossil strata, in DNA, okay? Models of what you would expect to see making sense about life. And that began to just put this little crack in the armor for me. I began to read a lot of Carl Sagan and studying about the cosmos and learning about, the Hubble telescope taking a single picture of an empty place in space and it being completely filled, not with planets, but with entire galaxies, okay? Space is expanding, okay? The Doppler effect, everything's moving away from each other. These are some big ideas, and what happened for me, and again, this is just me, and I'm not distilling it super well because I haven't really talked about this much in a while, but it just started to make Christianity seem smaller and smaller. It just started to really take on the odor, if you will, of a man-made explanation for what, where we come from, where we're going, and what it all means. Because those are the big questions, right? Where do we come from? Where are we going? And does our suffering have meaning? Okay? Now, I don't have a lot of great answers for that, because here are the answers as far as I can tell to these questions. Where did we come from? I don't know. And I don't know is a reasonable answer to that. It's better to admit ignorance and wait for evidence than to say, oh, we aliens, panspermia, aliens seeded life here. Or God made Adam, of course he did, and took a rib out of him while he was sleeping and turned that rib into a woman. And then they populated the earth. All right, like, it's better to say, I don't know. Now, I think evolutionary biology explains a lot about what happened. Now, there's talk about the primordial soup and how did it all start? Did a lightning bolt hit the amoeba that was I don't know. I don't fucking know. But I'm not willing to acquiesce to an explanation of that that makes no sense, okay? And that's that for me. And second question, where are we going? What happens when you die? Again, and I know it's a bummer, I don't know. And I'm skeptical of explanations about that, because here's what I do know. No one knows, okay? The smartest pastor in the world, the most holy man in the world, or woman, whoever that may be, they don't know either. okay? The big deal, though, is all those letters came out from Mother Teresa, her basically saying, I don't know if any of this is true. I've never talked to God. God's never talked to me. I've never heard his voice. I live in a lot of doubt of all this shit. Well, goddamn it, if she feels that way, what are we going to do? And that's the thing, is she didn't know, and no one knows. Now, you can have an idea about it. Well, I think when we die, we all go to heaven. Okay, well, that's cool. That's nice. I certainly would like to not die and be done having a conscious experience. But I'm not going to subscribe to an explanation of the afterlife without evidence because it flatters my frail ego and because I'm scared of dying, which I am. I don't want to ever be away from my kid, ever. I want to live with my kid forever. But I can't, you know? She has to grow up, and I have to move on. And then it's just, that's what life is, dudes. It makes me cry to almost think about it because it's so horrible, but that's what it is, as far as I can tell, okay? So you have to figure out your philosophy. And mine is, I stumbled upon this thing called methodological naturalism. And what that basically means is you use the scientific method to explain phenomena around you, and you provisionally wait for more evidence to come in. And you adjust, you know? You adjust for that shit. I don't believe faith is a virtue. I don't have faith in anything. I don't think faith is a good idea. In the marketplace of ideas about what's a good idea, what's a bad idea, I don't think the idea of believing in things without evidence, having faith, is a good idea. Okay? You should wait and withhold judgment until you can make a good decision. People say, well, you have faith in your wife, that she's not going to kill you in your sleep. No. I mean, I have 10 years of pretty solid evidence of her not being a murderous lunatic and her actually being a loving partner to support the idea that she's not going to kill me in my fucking sleep. Okay? That's not faith. I don't have faith in humanity. I believe that humanity is good because there are examples of it every day. I follow a subreddit called Humans Being Bros. Good sauce there. You get to see a lot of people surprising you. And I believe that that kind of altruistic behavior, it's explained by evolution. When you really get into that stuff, a lot of what you think would only make sense, like a god made us or something, you understand, no, we grew up in these communities where reciprocity, these communities lasted longer and were able to live long enough to procreate more because they lived in a pair bonding or a communal reciprocity community. I scratch your back, you scratch mine. We take care of each other. We help each other raise our kids. That's what community living is, going from nomadic stuff into living in tribes, and then tribes turning into cities, okay? It just, that, all of that stuff makes more sense. Now, I'm open to it, and let me clear this up before I move on from this subject. Some of you may be interested in this, some of you are fucking bored to tears. I don't know. And I can't worry about that. So let me clear something up, because there's a lot of confusion about what it means to be an atheist. Here's what an atheist means. It means, I do not believe in a God, okay? That is not me saying, I know there is no God. Maybe there is a God. I don't know. I reserve judgment. But in terms of making a positive statement about what I believe, okay? I don't believe in a God. And it's really up to people who do to prove it, because it doesn't make any philosophical sense to prove a negative, okay? If I told you there's an invisible kid in my fucking closet who eats potato chips and pops his pimples, it's not up to you to prove that he's not there. It's up to me to prove that he is there. You understand? It's the burden of proof. It's just classic shit. So my advice to all of you out there, or what I would leave you with, is that, and I studied this stuff for a decade, okay? I took it very, very seriously. Well, at least my big takeaway is, a lot of what seems mystical or romantic or sort of resonant about a spiritual life tied to Christianity, you can find it outside of it, okay? You can find people, like the communal aspect of it, you can find that outside of it. You don't need to believe in all these, because the thing is, it comes with a lot of horrible shit, okay? There's all sorts of subjugation of women. Most people don't know this because they actually haven't read the Bible, but all the slavery, all the killing of women and children and pillaging, go read about Joshua. Go read about Jericho. King David with all of his wives and all of his concubines, and he had the fucking dude murdered so he could be with Bathsheba, okay? And he's a biblical hero, all right? Abraham almost killed his son, and he's considered a biblical hero. Anyone who did that today, we would put them in jail, and we would be correct too, all right? It's not, in my opinion, it is not a book of morality. It's a book that represents heavily the time of the people who wrote it. And it was male-centered, it was dogmatic, it was a bunch of scared people who wanted a king, okay, king language. They wanted a daddy, our Father who art in heaven. And they were scared of where they came from because they don't know. They're scared of where they're going because they don't know. And they're scared of their suffering having no cosmic meaning because it seems like it doesn't. And it probably doesn't. Okay? I know that's some really bleak shit, but I'm just shooting you straight, okay? So I apologize. And maybe to get us out of this, we can listen to something really nice. Now, Fleetwood Mac fired Lindsey Buckingham. Let's just think about that for a second. They fired Lindsey Buckingham. That'd be like Pearl Jam firing Eddie goddamn Vedder. So I'm reading the news. Fleetwood Mac, set to tour the world, fires Lindsey Buckingham. And I'm just going, pfft. Well, good luck getting anyone to go see that tour. Then I read the next little bit that says, replaced by Mike Campbell and Neil Finn. And I thought, oh, shit. That is going to be sick. Neil Finn of Crowded House, Mike Campbell, of course, of the Heartbreakers. Well, the other night on the bus, I watched an entire show of this new Fleetwood Mac, sans Lindsey Buckingham. And I love Lindsey Buckingham so much. I love his guitar playing. I love his voice. I love his songwriting. So I went in a little skeptical, but this is a beautiful gig. You guys got to go check it out if you like Fleetwood Mac. They open with The Chain. They play all the hits. It's great. Now, in the middle of the show, Mick Fleetwood comes out to introduce Neil Finn, because Neil Finn's doing all the singing and playing rhythm guitar and stuff. And then he goes away, and Neil Finn sings Don't Dream It's Over by himself. And you're listening to this song, and you're feeling this ache for, like, forgotten things and things unknown, and it's got this, you're remembering things again. This song, for me anyway, is a bit of a spiritual experience, because I believe in the spiritual experience. I believe that when people are on stage making music and they're communicating at that level, that there's something interesting happening that's really hard to just put down on paper. Now, does that mean that Jesus is going to come save us all at the end of the world? I don't know. But I try to reclaim the word spiritual for some of these moments. When you hear a song and you close your eyes and you can just have, you can smell something again. You can smell where you were when you first heard it, okay? It makes you feel things that are deep within, deeply buried. It untangles things. That's this song. And this is a version that Neil did. I think he did it in New Zealand somewhere. And it's real stripped down with strings, and I'm just going to let you hear it and get the tissues ready because the song is moving. Here it is, Don't Dream It's Over.
There is freedom within, there is freedom without. Try to catch the deluge in a paper cup. There's a battle ahead, many battles are lost, but you'll never see the end of the road while you're traveling with me. Hey now, don't dream it's over. Hey now, when the world comes in, well they come, to build a wall between. No, they won't win. Now I'm towing my car. There's a hole in the roof. My possessions are causing me suspicion, but there's no proof. In the paper today, tales of war and of vice, but you turn right over to the TV page. Don't dream it's over. Hey now, when the world comes in, drum, and I'm counting the steps to the door of your heart. Only shadows ahead, barely clearing the roof. Get to know the feeling of liberation and release. Hey now, don't dream it's over. Hey now, when the word comes in, they come to build a wall between.
Wow, amazing. I mean, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just a nostalgic simpleton. But honestly, this is my religion, okay? And again, I stressed this at the beginning of that talk. There's room for it all for me. I don't care what you believe. I really don't give a shit. You know, now, I've run into some cases in my journey as an atheist where there's no room for me for some people. Because what they believe is so rigid or so mutually exclusive, and I can't really do anything about that. What I love about music is, for me, it flattens it all out, because I can get in a room with someone who someone like Ethan, my beautiful friend Ethan, who's a religious cat, and we're just unified by music, and that's my God. That's my religion. Humanity, you know, like secular humanism, music, the power of art, the power of narrative and story to move you, to help you understand deep truths about yourself, pass them on to your children, try to enjoy your life, okay? And before we answer some more questions, I do want to address quickly anyone out there who is struggling with crisis of belief. Here are some resources, okay? There's a Sam Harris podcast called The Making Sense Podcast. You need to listen to that, okay? Sam Harris also wrote a book called Letter to a Christian Nation that I would recommend. He wrote a really great book about morality called The Moral Landscape. You got to read Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion. It's unbelievable. Now, when it comes to evolutionary biology, you got to read Dawkins' The Greatest Show on Earth. Jerry Coyne also wrote Why Evolution is True, which is great. All the Carl Sagan stuff is great. Let's see, what else while we're here? Brief Candle in the Dark would be the Carl Sagan book I would recommend to you. Stephen Hawking, of course, wrote a book called The Grand Design. You need to check that out. Lawrence Krauss wrote a book called A Universe from Nothing, in which he explains how the universe, a theory about how the universe began that is that stacks up with theoretical physics models. That's all important stuff. Christopher Hitchens wrote a book called God is Not Great. You need to check that out. There's all sorts of great resources for that. Now, if you're a religious person transitioning, and there's a guy named Dan Barker, who started the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You need to check that out too. I'm not trying to harp on that. I don't work for the fucking atheist community. I just want to provide material for people who, like me, were struggling with some of this stuff, because a lot of people do. A lot of people move in and out of all sorts of belief systems. And again, just to wrap it up in a nice little, beautiful, pluralistic bow, I'm cool with all of it. As long as you're not trying to legislate morality or telling me how to live my fucking life. So there we go. Moving on to some questions here. Joey Swartz says, did I see something about your boy, Bob Schneider, playing the Kiss Cruise? I don't know. Did you? All joking aside, I haven't heard that. If he is, that'll be fun. Bob used to be managed by Doc McGee, who manages Kiss. So he's known Doc for years. So it wouldn't surprise me if they're working on that. Keith Jones 15 says, your thought on Lil Nas X song Old Town Road being taken off country charts for being not country enough. I haven't heard the song in question, so I don't know. In terms of what's country enough or whatever, my initial feeling about that is, who gets to fucking decide that? Who gets to stand over and arbiter what is and what isn't anything? Genres are definitely blending now. Pop and country and rock, it's all blending. And blending is good. It's harder to define. I get it. Harder to format for radio. I understand. We love to just be able to put shit in boxes. That's a horror film. That's a science fiction film. That's a thriller. Are you kidding me? Alien is all three of those things. And it's a drama. The best things have elements of everything, okay? Get Out was a great thriller and a great horror movie, and parts of it were a comedy. And it was definitely a drama. I'm sorry I'm using film references, but I don't know that song, and I don't know enough about it. But I know Maren Morris is getting a lot of shit because her new record, they're saying it's not country. Well, whatever. Okay, fine. Who fucking cares? Anya asked, do you do anything else creatively besides music? Great question. I write poetry. I write short stories occasionally. I've wanted to write a novel. But in general, no. I've tried to like draw or paint. I'm not really good at that. My wife paints well. I think my kid's going to end up painting. But music kind of for me is what consumes my life. I would love to get involved in the making of films or TV shows, like on the writing side. I tried to write like a 15-minute stand-up routine once. It was so horrible. I was just going to like write 15 minutes and go do it somewhere like and not tell anybody, like go to an open mic. But I never did. And I'm just trying to lean into what I know I should be doing, which is making music. And time spent not doing that usually is not good for me. But I do appreciate that thoughtful question. Thank you. Fucking Rockin' asks, was playing country music something you did before Nashville, or was it a product of moving to Nashville? What genre did you start playing first? Well, I'm a rock kid. I'm a rock and roll kid through and through. Always loved country music. Maybe not the modern stuff. Well, I mean, I grew up listening to Garth Brooks, you know, but went through, and when I was in high school, went through a big Hank Sr. thing, because I'm from Montgomery, Alabama, where he was born and where he spent much of his career, where he's buried. So I feel a blood connection to Hank Sr., Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash, all the great old 60s and 70s stuff I've always loved. But in terms of playing guitar, it was always rock and roll. It was Metallica and Pearl Jam and U2 and Smashing Pumpkins and Radiohead and Tool and just the whole stew of late 80s, early 90s shit, and then getting into classic rock and fucking going down the Pink Floyd train, which I got heavily into Pink Floyd, heavily into Led Zeppelin, all the great bands in the 70s. And then, of course, Guns N' Roses, just all of it, mainly guitar-centered stuff. And then, yeah, moving to Nashville is kind of where it was time to get your country chops up and start learning how to adapt to that music, because it is a threat. It's an industry that works, you know, and it's how people like me can make a living making art. And I don't mind it, you know. I don't listen to it privately very much, but it's not that bad to make it. It's fun. And most of the people like me are displaced rock kids. People like me, meaning people who play guitars for these people, for fucking Jason Aldean and Luke Bryan and, you know, Carrie Underwood. We know all these people, for Darius Rucker and for Luke Combs and Chris Young and Jana Kramer and Michael Ray, Carly Pierce. We know these are all of our friends. And most of them are rock kids. It's kind of just adapting to survive, you know. One more and we'll listen to another tune. Danny Los Angeles says, to seeing a band live before you hear their record influence your opinion on a band. I've listened to bands before and didn't really dig their music, but then saw them live and got it, if that makes any sense. It totally makes sense. It can go either way. It depends on how good the band is live, because you can see a band live, and for many different reasons, it wasn't a good show. Maybe they're not good live. Maybe they had a new bass player that sucked. Maybe there was internal conflict in the band. Maybe they were hungover. Maybe they were on drugs. Who knows? But you can see a show that sucks and it turns you off, and then you hear a record and you're like, oh shit, this is beautiful, but they sucked live. Or you can hear a record and not really get it, like Danny sang, and then you kind of see the power of them live if they're a great live band, and you totally get it. I saw the Damwells at City Stages in 2003 or 4, and I'd heard of them because the drummer in the band I was playing in at the time was a huge fan, and he always had this Damwell shirt, and I always liked the band name. But this is back in a time where you couldn't just go find all the music in the world. You know, there was context for this, because I saw that they were playing City Stages. I was there to see, like, Pete Yorn or Blue Epic or something. I was like, oh, the Damwells, yeah, John's into them. Let's go check it out. And it blew me the fucking away, dude. So much rock and roll attitude. It started raining, and the guitar player went out and put his guitar in the rain. I thought that was so cool. I'll never forget it, man. And I marched my little happy ass to the merch booth, and I bought the only record they had out, which was called PMR Plus One. Get in my car, put it in, and it's really different than what they just played live. It's more mellow. And I was like, oh, shit. It doesn't rock. But then that grew on me, and then that, I got super into that record. And then the next time I was able to see them live at the Nick in Birmingham, I had that context for the rock thing they were doing. And then I got their next full length, which was more of a rock thing, because that's what they were excited about, which is why they were playing it. You just get on the ride, and you start looking in the different train compartments. For all the treasure. That's what I love about this shit. And I guess the ultimate lesson is, whether it's good or bad, whether it's the record or the live performance, art deserves to be... You take chances with shit. Give shit a chance. Let it breathe. Let it marinate. Listen to it under different circumstances. You might feel differently about it. And speaking of that, the Damwells got the original lineup back together for this record a few years ago. And it was a magical time for me, because they'd kind of broken up. They were kind of doing all these other things. But they got the band back together. They made a beautiful record. It didn't do anything, and they broke up again. It's a sad tale. But the last song on this record is called None of These Things. And, you know, I was in a horrible relationship that ended horribly. And this is one of the songs that kind of got me through it. And you're going to listen to it right now.
Looks like you're gonna take the easy way out. I heard you on the telephone with a friend. You said maybe we'll meet someday in the middle of the street. But I know I'll never see you again. Santa's blowing in a lullaby at dawn. Same one I've been listening to all night. I'll wake up in the same place tomorrow and you'll be gone. And there won't even be a fight. There are train lines, there are bus rides that will take you back and forth from bad to better lives. There are love songs and there are desperate lies. But none of those things will keep you here. 'Cause none of these things will make you love me. Reads the minutes that will turn into hours, and the hours that will turn us into ghosts. Your cup's here guarding time with dead and dying flowers, and I can't move it from its post. There are train lines, there are bus rides that will take you back and forth from bad to better lives. There are love songs and there are desperate lies. But none of those things will keep you here. 'Cause none of these things will make you love me. I'm
just wish you could. I just wanna sleep while the sorrow's cheap. I think I hear your keys. There are train lines, there are bus rides that will take you back and forth from bad to better lives. There are love songs, there are desperate lies. But none of those things will keep you here, 'cause none of these things will make you love me. Looks like you're gonna take the easy way out. Heard you on the telephone with a friend. Maybe you'll whisper my name from an old widow's dream. Maybe I'll never see you again.
Powerful. Powerful song, man. All right, well, we're moving right along here. We having fun? Everyone okay? Everyone doing good out there? Let's try to get through some of these questions that all you beautiful people are asking. Bill V says, do you think having a number one... Oh, wait, he already asked this. Are charts other than the Billboard 200 are bullshit? It's complicated, dude. And I'm not trying to beg off or be condescending. And I don't know as much about it as I probably should. I tend to keep my head down and just try to do great work. Just try to make sure that when my little babies go out in the world, I know that I did the best I could, and I surrender to that. You know, I try to surrender to that and move forward, and all the politics and the business and all that is just beyond my control, and it doesn't have much to do spiritually with the work I try to do. I hope that makes sense. I hope that doesn't sound like bullshit. Backlangsbug asks, what's the favorite of the different live openers Metallica have had over the years? Bread Fan, Horseman, Lights, Creep, Fight Fire, Battery, Black, and Sandman. That was just your life hardwired fuel. The jamming thing turned into So What or Last Caress or whatever else song they have opened with through the years. Probably Blackened. Blackened's the most bitchin' opener to me. On record and live. Although Creeping Death too, good God. They did a really good job at making sure that the first thing you hear, whether it's the record, the new record, Lightning or Puppets or Justice, the first thing just kicks your ass. You know? I mean, I would even say for Frantic, that's true. Graham Stark says, who's your most favorite fictional character or top two? It's a really close call. Whoa, great question. I love Tom Bombadil from the Lord of the Rings stuff. Such a mysterious figure that kind of floats in and out. Like the oldest living thing in the world. That's fun. Man, I love Freddy Krueger. Freddy Krueger's my homie. Okay, I think I've told this story before, but I used to dress up like Freddy Krueger for Halloween every year. Was obsessed with him, obsessed with Nightmare on Elm Street. And I had used, but I, you know, ironically, or maybe not so ironically, I would have dreams where he was trying to goddamn kill me. I was having nightmares about Freddy Krueger all the time. And in one of those dreams, he's pulling me under the bed into hell. Like the movie Little Monsters was popular at the time, where he went under his bed and it was like hell down there. And Freddy's pulling me, I'm like on my back, sliding on my back, and he's laughing and pulling my legs. And I yell, Freddy, don't, I'm your number one fan. Who else? Man. That is a really great question that I'm going to answer it so shittily, you know. I'm trying to, like, of all the care, I love stories so much. I'm avid reader, avid film watcher. I love fictional characters so much, but I'm drawing a blank. So I guess I'll just have to settle for sounding super duper uncultured. Metallicat says, what's your favorite Pearl Jam song and what album would you recommend? Black is mine. I guess The Bitterness spoke to me. But I got off the ride of Vitology, and I'm missing some of their finest. Am I missing some of their finest work? Absolutely. After Vitology, they made a really great record called No Code. That's divisive. Some people didn't like it, but if you like Vitology, you will like No Code. After No Code, they made one of their most beloved records by everybody called Yield. On Yield is a song called Given to Fly. which is my favorite Pearl Jam song. After Yield, they made a really great record called Binaural. Binaural is much darker. It's got the darkness of Vitalogy, but it's not that. It's not as quirky. It's not as sort of out there. It's just dark. The songs I would point you towards, let's say, Kat, that you're making a playlist, okay? On No Code, here are the songs you need to... I'll give you two songs from each record. On No Code, I would put Hail Hail and Present Tense on the playlist. Hail Hail and Present Tense. On Yield, I would put Given the Fly and Faithful. From their next record, Binaural, I would put Nothing As It Seems and Thin Air. Then they made a record called Riot Act. Now, from that album, I would put on Love Boat Captain and Save You. Then they made a self-titled record. I'm doing the history of Pearl Jam now. They made a self-titled record. From that, I would put on Gone and Worldwide Suicide, or Gone and Unemployable. And then they made their last record, which I'm about to play a song from, and I would put, it's called Lightning Bolt. Oh, actually, I skipped Backspacer. Sorry, Jesus. From Backspacer, I would put on, if you want to rock, I'd put on Supersonic, and I'd put on Got Some. Then they made my Lightning Bolt, and I would put on Sirens, and this song that I'm about to play for you all right now called My Father's Son.
I come from a genie, I say I am my father's son. Yeah, too bad he was a psychopath, and now I'm the next in line.
Great song. Super creepy lyrics. It totally rocks. They still got it. They're like Metallica. They're still doing great shit. Now, that record came out kind of a long time ago now, like 2013 maybe. It's time for Pearl Jam to make another record and show the world why they have the staying power that they have, in my opinion. Big Pearl Jam fan my whole life. My whole life. Okay? Let's answer some more questions. We're having fun. We're having a good time. Matt Bird asks, how did your first band end up? Well, the first band I was ever in properly, we were called Soma. We were named after a deep cut Smashing Pumpkins song. And we played what was, our high school was called Pelham High School. We played what was called Pelapalooza. Okay. We played Share Brock. We played Sober by Tool. We played One by U2. We played Fade to Black and the song One by Metallica. And we had a friend of ours holding the strobe light for the machine gun kick part. We actually had a friend doing a strobe light for that. And we built these like fake rafters that we could walk up, and like me and the other guitar player like walked up them for the dual guitar solo thing. And we also did Porch by Pearl Jam. I don't know whatever happened to that band. We weren't really a band. My next real band was called The Blue Floor, and we were a Christian rock band, and we would play churches or colleges and youth camps, and we were kind of like Pearl Jam. We wanted to be Pearl Jam, but we were writing about Christian themes. Not worshipy stuff, but like our music was definitely religious. Like we talked about God, we talked about what it meant to live a life of faith, how confusing that was, married with culture and relationships and our girlfriends and all that stuff. That band broke up just because it was going nowhere. I don't think we were very good. We made a record that I should probably listen to. Anyway, that was called The Blue Floor. And my partner in that band, Jeff, went on to marry the girl I was dating at the time in that band. And now they've been married forever, and they have a couple of kids. And he is in the ASO, the Alabama Symphony. And he's a really talented trombone player. He went to the Peabody Institute of Music, and he's a great musician. And they're doing good, I think, as far as I can tell. Then I was in a cover band for like 8 years. Called Loose Stone in Birmingham, and we did, our first set was like the lead singer played acoustic, and we would do like more delicate stuff like Train and Coldplay, maybe some Pearl, like we would do Daughter by Pearl Jam. Then we would take a break. Then the middle set was our party set, where we were doing like Bon Jovi and Prince and Def Leppard and Motley Crue and fucking NXS. And then the third set was like all heavy. It was like Rage Against the Machine and Tool and Guns and Metallica. It was really fun. And I learned a lot being in that band because I was plunged I joined that band when I was 16. And everyone in the band was about 10 years older than me. We're all still friends, but just plunged into the seedy underbelly of Birmingham clubs. And it was thrilling. It was really exciting to do that work and then wake up the next day and go to high school. And it was a good lesson in like, I would live that life, like playing these 4-hour sets until 2 a.m. in Birmingham. And no one really knew about it. Like I wasn't like going to school the next day like a big hero, like the fucking Van Halen brothers who were just fucking everything that moved while they were in high school because they knew they were cool. I didn't really have a sense of that. But I would go to high school and feel like this isn't real. Like all these social structures, the education part of it, like getting a B on a test isn't real for me. Because I knew I was going to make music. And I struggled in school with some academic stuff because the uselessness of it, there was a nihilism to it of like a meaninglessness to getting a good grade on a test. When I knew I was going to, that Thursday night, go do what I was supposed to do, which was play the fucking solo to Crazy Train for a bunch of 28-year-old chicks who were liking it. You know, I was sort of doomed to it. That band was called Loose Stone. They kind of broke up. I was in a band with my friend Hunter Barrow called Better Western Half that was great. It was very like David Gray, Coldplay, sensitive, UK-based singer-songwriter stuff, but with like ambient, like Smithsy, The Cure-ish guitars. I mean, all bands kind of just break up eventually. That band broke up, and I don't think I've ever really been in a real band since. Oh, well, no, I was in another band with my friend Brad Lyons, who he hosts Single Podcast Theory, the Pearl Jam podcast, which I recommend listening to, by the way, if you like Pearl Jam. Especially because they're basically just Metal Up Your Podcast copiers, except just plug in Pearl Jam facts. me and Brad were in a band called The Green Leaves, where we made this whole band modeled after, we would write songs based on Flannery O'Connor's short stories, this Southern Gothic writer. And she had a story called Green Leaf, so we've had a band called The Green Leaves, and we actually did play around town, and we made a record, and that was actually a really cool, beautiful band, and I loved being in a band with Brad. We were living together at the time. I had gotten divorced, and I'd moved out of my house from my first wife and lived with Brad. And those days were just filled with a lot of drinking, a lot of late nights on the porch, a lot of poetry writing, a lot of Bukowski reading, and a lot of making music. And we sort of, it sounded like Cold Roses era Ryan Adams and the Cardinals. It was kind of what we were real excited about at the time. And then I moved to Nashville in 2010 or 11, and it's kind of been off to the races ever since then. Really long answer to that question. A few more questions here. Lou Fighter 83, if you could go back in time to any Met show, what would it be? Oh, I don't know. I'd like to go see one of the shows with Cliff. I'd like to go to one of the Ozzy shows. I'd like to go to Seattle 89 and be there in the Circle Pit during Whiplash. Cunning Stunts for sure. I'd love to see some Madly in Anger with the World tour shows because those set lists were so bitchin'. Bane1775 says, any thoughts on why instrumentals in rock/metal music are generally overlooked? It's not new or exactly rare to have an instrumental on an album. I didn't know they were overlooked. I think a lot of people like Metallica's instrumentals. In terms of other bands' instrumentals, like there's one, Alice in Chains has Whale and Wasp on Jar of Flies. They're okay. I think people try to connect with singing. I think people like lyrics, but even when they don't understand the lyrics, which I think is most of the time, especially on a first listen, what they're responding to is the human voice. You know? I know that that's true for me. I tend to consider instrumentals kind of boring, unless it's something great like Metallica. To me, To Live Is To Die and Call of Cthulhu, Orion, those are not boring songs to me. They take you on a journey that I don't even know would be made better by having lyrics. But in general, I like a lyric. You got a beautiful piece of music, put some lyrics on there. Write some dark poetry. Get the net. All right. There's another question here. My friend Edgar, about Billie Eilish, what's your favorite song? Why? And how did you stumble upon her? Well, I've been writing with these younger pop chicks, and of course they're coming in, and when we talk about what we want to write that day and what we want it to sound like, they're just freaking out about Billie Eilish. So, of course, we pull it up on YouTube. We watch it. And the first thing I ever saw was Bury a Friend. And I thought it was okay. What do you want from me? Where did it go? Kind of has this People Are Strange vibe from The Doors. But then they played me the video for You Should See Me Wear a Crown, which is my favorite Billie Eilish song. And I'm just going to have to refer you guys to go watch it. In the video, she picks up this crown that's covered in spiders. And she puts it on her head. And for the rest of the video, all the spiders are crawling all over her face, in her mouth, on her fucking eyeball. And it's all real. It's not Photoshopped. And the song is just so creepy and awesome. It's just the shit. I'm not going to play You Should See Me Wear a Crown. Go look it up. Go have fun. Her record just came out yesterday. And you better believe I pre-ordered that bitch. So I got a little note. See, this is what happens when you buy music. You pre-order it. They gave you four songs. Then you get to wait. You get to anticipate. And then last night on the bus, I got a little beep on my phone that said, your pre-order is available because the record dropped. And I will be getting it on vinyl. Yes. I will be playing it at the house on the B-Rig in the Stude. Yes. This is a song called Wish You Were Gay. Billie Eilish, check it out.
Baby, I don't feel so good. Six words you never understood. I'll never let you go. Five words you never say. I laugh alone like nothing's wrong. 4 days has never felt so long. If three's a crowd and two is us, one slipped away. I just wanna make you feel okay. But didn't want to stay. I just kinda wish you were gay. Is there a reason we're not through? Is there a 12-step just for you? Our conversations all in blue. 11 haze, 10 fingers tearing out my hair. 9 times you never made it there. I ate alone at 7, you were 6 minutes away. How am I supposed to make you feel okay?
There you go, Billie Eilish, brand new tunes. The record's called When We Sleep, Where Do We Go? And what can I say? I recommend it. Thank you to all of you out there in Metal Up Your Podcast land who listen to the radio shows, who send in the questions, who are on the ride with us. Can't say it enough that we love you and we appreciate your support. You make the work that we're doing worth it. And you can always write in metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. For any questions or thoughts or criticisms or whatever the fuck you want, we read all the emails. A lot of times we read them on the shows, as most of you know. But we do read them all, even if it takes a minute to get back to you. And we're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the socials. You can go follow us there. Get involved. Get on the level. Please go leave us the iTunes review. If you haven't done it, only takes a second. Don't be part of the Metal Up Your Podcast family that hasn't done it. Because you listen to the show every week. You like the show. You're laughing out loud. You're showing it to your friends. Love all that. Go leave the review and just say that. Love it. Laugh out loud. Tell all my friends. If you really like the show and you're thinking, how can I get involved and make sure that these dudes know that the show has value, you can go to patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, and .com/metalupyourpodcast, and you can get involved at that level. We love our patrons. We try to make special things for the patrons all the time. But enough of all that. I just wanted to say I love you. I hope you're well. If you're going through some tough shit, it'll get better. Hang in there. You got buds all around you. There are people in your life who need you. They want you around. They love you. Am I just talking to myself right now? All right. Peace, homies.
captured your heart right from the start. I knew you'd set a fire in me, and I'd rather be sad with you.